Welcome to NYT Tech Talk, a technology podcast of the New York Times. I'm Tom Holcomb.
And I'm J.D. Beersdorfer.
In this episode, John Quain on mobile banking. J.D. answers a question about paint. Yep, paint. And I talk about a problem some people are having with Windows Mail. But first,
some news. For those who've been waiting with breathless anticipation since January for the iPhone's release, the Federal Communications Commission has just moved Apple's iPod smartphone gadget one step closer to stores. The FCC has now approved the iPhone for use on the public airwaves, and the device is expected to hit the shelves in late June. This is despite a reported hoax email going around last week that claimed that the iPhone was getting delayed until October. Apple has denied that. Two versions of the iPhone will be available at first. The 4GB phone will cost $499, and the 8GB phone will sell for $599. Both require a two-year contract with AT&T, the wireless company formerly known as Singular. Recycling your old computer just got a little easier. The office supply store Staples is expanding its electronics waste recycling program by accepting used computers and monitors. These items can now be dropped off for a $10 fee at any of the chain's 1,400 U.S. locations during store hours, and that $10 is to defray the recycling costs. This is an expansion of its four-year-old program that already allows customers to drop off smaller electronics like cell phones, pagers, and digital cameras for free, regardless of the brand or whether the device was purchased at Staples. Computer peripherals, such as keyboards, mice, and speakers, will be accepted at no cost. Televisions and floor model photocopiers, should you have one, however, will not be taken. If you want to make cool things on the web but don't know how to write code, Microsoft has a toolkit for you. Last week, the company announced an alpha, or very early test version, of PopFly, a toolset that can help non-technical users build and share mashups, web pages, and applications. The PopFly Creator tool enables users to connect blocks or pieces of code for fetching data from a website or performing other tasks like snagging their photos from Flickr and displaying them like a slideshow, all of this without having to write code. But wait, there's more. The PopFly Space website is an online community where users can host, share, rate, comment, and remix creations from other users. PopFly is built with Microsoft's new Silverlight 1.0 rich media tool, which is sort of like Adobe's Flash software, and Microsoft is inviting a limited number of users to test the alpha version of PopFly on its website. You can find a link to PopFly, as well as all the other sites mentioned in this podcast, at nytimes.com/techtalk. And that's been a quick look at the news.
Tellers beware. In fact, ATMs beware. The cell phone may soon be after your job. John Quain joins us to talk about what's happening in mobile banking. Welcome, John.
Thanks.
No, John, I was banking by phone with Citibank before banking even came to the web. They used to have a standalone product I had on my PC. I would use my 1200 baud modem to dial up with their direct access software. Banking by phone has come a long way, hasn't it?
It certainly has, a long way. I mean, I think people are getting more used to doing it online now, too. I tested it years ago and always would report about it and look at the updates. But quite frankly, until recently, I didn't use it that much myself.
The online banking I've used quite a bit, but now this is mobile banking that your article is about. What are some of the challenges to overcome to get mobile banking off the ground?
Well, the first thing is you're dealing with a cell phone and a tiny little screen, and that makes it difficult to just simply connect to the web. Although most cell phones that are sold today have some form of internet access available to them, even if you haven't purchased one of those data rate plans, is what the carriers call them, your cell phone can connect to the internet. But just doing that and looking at the online banking site isn't probably going to do you much good. You'd have to scroll sideways and scroll up and down to find the numbers and download each page. It really would take forever. So the challenge has been, how do you design something like this to fit on that tiny cell phone screen?
And what's the solution? What have they come up with?
Well, there was another system, something called WAP, which is a web application protocol, and it works okay, or wireless application protocol. It works all right. The trouble is that it's sort of like a poor man's web. What it does is eliminate most of the graphics that you see online and try and shrink everything down to that small screen. but it's never really taken off very well. It just hasn't been very popular with consumers. And it's not very quick. It still means that you have to download every page. So the new approach that has just been launched by a couple of banks in the United States is to have a specific software application that runs on your cell phone. So you would download a little piece of software, and that would be designed to run your online banking application. And in my tests and trying out a couple of them, it is a lot quicker and it is a lot easier to use. In some cases, easier to use than the standard online banking that you do on your computer.
So we've come full circle. We started with standalone PC programs for online banking, then we moved on to the web, and we're going back to standalone applications.
It is, sort of. It looks remarkably like what you see at an ATM. You often have not a very big screen there either. And you see your balances, and you can track checking, and whether particular payments have cleared to particular payees. And you can do all that on your cell phone screen now with these little applications.
Do you really need a fancy modern phone for this to work? Will this work on most phones?
Remarkably, it worked on my 2-year-old Motorola Razr. I was a little skeptical, but it did work on that phone. And even though that phone uses one of the older data networks, so it's a little bit slower, but I thought it was quite quick enough. In fact, it took maybe 3 or 4 seconds to see an account balance, just a couple of clicks on my phone. And in general, I found it to be pretty fast. Certainly fast enough, and as fast as what I get on my home computer, say, when I'm doing the monthly bills.
This is really fascinating. And one of the more interesting things I read in your article was the idea that they might develop a standard application that will be the online banking application for cell phones instead of Citibank making theirs and Bank of America making theirs. How's that going?
That seems to be picking up a lot of momentum. Currently, the first ones out really are Bancorp South. Has been working with a company called Firethorn, which is in Atlanta. And Firethorn is making the connection basically between the banks and the cell phone carriers. So, in other words, they're developing just one piece of software that will look pretty common across all different phones, and no matter what bank you happen to use or be a customer of. So, in essence, that company would provide one piece of software that could be on the AT&T/Singular network or Verizon Wireless or T-Mobile or Sprint, and it wouldn't matter what bank you're with. If you were with Bancorp South, you could get onto it. Wachovia is coming onto that system, and several other banks have signed up as well. So it would provide basically a common interface, and then you wouldn't have to rely on a particular carrier or a particular bank. At the moment, some banks work on some carriers and not on others, and that creates some confusion. For example, the Citibank service that has just launched, it's called City Mobile, which I tested and liked very much, but it's not available yet to T-Mobile customers. It is if you're on Singular or Verizon or Sprint, but not T-Mobile.
And this will also allow phone makers to preload the banking software on the phone, so when you get your phone, there's already a banking application there and perhaps even a dedicated button.
Exactly. Many of them are planning to do that. Probably you'll see the first phones from Samsung toward the end of this year come preloaded with some of the software, and then you would select your bank. In each case, you really have to start out online on your computer or by calling the bank. And the reason for that is so that you can get a special access code. So that helps in some of the security issues. And every time you have to log on from your phone. But I really found it only took a couple of seconds.
Well, thanks, John, for taking the time to talk to us today. You can read John's article in this Thursday's New York Times. Take care, John.
Thanks.
Q&A is up next with one of your questions and a topic of interest.
We have a reader who's written in. Instead of using a movie screen with my high-definition video projector, I want to put an even bigger image right on the wall. Is there any special wall paint for this? Now, using a video projector to beam movies, photos, video games onto the wall can give you the largest picture in town, depending on the size of your wall. And several companies actually sell specially formulated reflective paint that enhances the color, brightness, and contrast of the images projected onto it. Now, since paint stores and home centers like your Home Depot may not stock it, going online to find a dealer is probably going to be the best place to find this stuff. And prices are probably going to be a little bit higher than your basic Benjamin Moore interior paint, but these types of specialized products are designed just for projected images. Now, screen paint colors can vary from white to gray depending on the type of projector you have and what you're using. And Goo Systems, which makes a variety of reflective acrylic coatings, has a product calculator on its website that guides you through picking the right stuff for your specific projection system. They're one of the companies that make this stuff, Goo Systems. I believe it's called Screen Goo. We'll have a link to their website on our show page. And there's another company called Digital Theater Paint that also has information on dealers and the technology behind its paint and how best to apply it to the surface you want to use for your de facto wall screen. So, yes, there is a special products out there. I guess a lot of people will say, I'll just get some bright white and put it
on
there.
That's what I would have thought. I wouldn't even have thought to ask if there's a special paint for it.
Yeah, apparently if you use like especially glossy white paint, it can cause hot spots and things mm-hmm. from the projected image. And people are saying that actually for digital projection, there's a very light gray that actually brings out a lot of the contrast and color much more richly when you're using a LCD projector.
As you say, though, you need a wall big enough to project an image on. In our immediate listening area in New York City, of course, that's going to be a problem with the bicycle hanging on the wall. It's kind of hard to watch a movie around it.
Or if you're in the tiny studio apartment where, you know, a 20-inch screen may seem like the big screen, maybe not so much there, but for people who have the space and have the equipment to have the projector and the DVD player and all that hooked up together, it could be a really nice way to just, you know, maximize the use of your wall.
I've got a topic here. Every day, from all over the world, people seeking answers come to a vibrant part of the internet that predates the web, the internet newsgroups. I'm sure you were there.
Oh, yeah.
Many newsgroups are dedicated to discussing software, whether it's Windows, Mac OS, Linux, or something else. It's not unusual to find people struggling with crashes and conflicts. It does raise an eyebrow, however, when you start to see the same problem being voiced over and over and the same solution being offered. So in one of these communities, microsoft.public.windows.vista.mail, over the past several weeks, I've been seeing just that. The problem is usually a variation of, help, I can't send messages in Windows Mail, or I can't delete messages in Windows Mail, or Windows Mail is frozen. The solution that seems to get results is always the same, and more often than not, it's offered by Stephen L. Cochran, Ph.D., MVP. His doctorate is in physiology, and the MVP stands for Microsoft Valued Professional. I'll let him explain the issue since he's on the phone with me right now. Welcome, Stephen. Just to be sure it's clear to our listeners, can you briefly explain what it means to be an MVP?
Well, MVP, with respect to Microsoft, is a person who has a track record of helping people in Microsoft news groups or elsewhere with products that Microsoft provides. But I've been actively involved with Outlook Express, which is the predecessor to Windows Mail, since 1997.
Well, that's a good long time.
Yes.
Now, you told me a story about the download traffic on your website, because you have a website, www.oehelp.com, and the OE stands for Outlook Express. What were you telling me about the download traffic?
Well, it's picked up since Vince Vista's been around, and especially for some of my Windows Mail pages and information I've added on there. I get about 1,000 hits a day on the website itself, and just with Windows Mail Utility I've put out in the last couple of months, I've had over 10,000 hits on that page.
And you are now self-employed, and largely because of the activity with your website?
Yes, there was a problem. There continues to be a problem with a message store format with Outlook Express. And it's very, very fragile. It's like made of glass, and if you touch it, it shatters, in such that your file, for instance, that contains all of your inbox message will become corrupt and is no longer readable by Outlook Express. And so my programs will go in there and attempt to recover the mail. And so my income is based largely on that.
What's different now that seems to have increased the activity in that news group?
Well, Vista. Vista is new, and so the news group has actually changed. It used to be Outlook Express news group. Now they put a new news group for Vista Mail. And the reason we're getting so many hits or complaints or questions in there is, first, is it's brand new, and it's not. It has a slightly different interface than Outlook Express, although it is basically Outlook Express in the innards except for the database format change. So then people have problems like, how do I set up my mail account? They don't know how to do it. Or I can't send and receive. They have problems with that, and that's related to probably some third-party programs, as well as some other aspects that just happen with new software and people getting used to it. But then there's some also, there are bugs that always get released with new software, and then there's third-party programs that are interfering with the software. So it's a combination of things that bring people into the news group.
One particular series of problems that I'm seeing crop up have to do with Windows Mail freezing or not being able to delete messages or not being able to send messages in Windows Mail. And those seem to have a common solution, and you're often offering that solution. Can you explain what that is?
The show-stopping issue is that a message will get stuck in the outbox. Now, it's not clear how that message gets stuck, but once it's stuck, you can't send mail at all. And so if you look where the message should be, there's actually no message there, which means that there's an error in the database entry that can't be deleted. And as a consequence, you have mail stuck in other folders sometimes as well, but the show-stopping feature is you can't not send mail if you have a message stuck in your outbox. And the solution prior to this has been to, well, wipe out the entire message store, move it to another location, and then it'll start fresh, and then you can set things back up again. But that's kind of like a sledgehammer approach. And so what I did was I wrote a little routine, and it goes in and programs the database and looks for those entries in the outbox, and it wipes them out. So then all a person has to do is click a button, and it fixes the problem for them.
This particular tool that you just mentioned, though, you offer that one for free, is that correct?
Yes. Doesn't feel right to charge people to fix a major problem like that.
Now, what seems to be the cause of the corruption in the mail store? I've seen some advice that has to do with the antivirus programs.
The problem with these news groups is that we get anecdotal information, and then we suggest a cure. And it's kind of an evolving process to know what's causing this, what's causing that. And very often, if you say, try this, the person will try it, but they'll never post back in the news group whether it worked or not. So it, very much it's a one-way dialogue. And occasionally we get, this fixed it, thank you. And a lot of the corruption we're seeing is fixed by uninstalling antivirus software. That problem did not exist in the Vista beta tests. But as soon as it gets out on the street with computers preloaded with antivirus software, there's the coincidental inference that that could be causing that particular issue. But we don't know for sure that the antivirus is involved with the stuck messages or not. And there are plenty of antivirus software out there that works very, very well, that doesn't slow down the system like many do, and that are not nearly as aggressive.
Also, might it be, Stephen, that it's just that Vista's so new that a lot of the antivirus programs have not been tweaked to properly work with Vista yet? I spoke with Ed Metcalf over at McAfee, and he was saying that, in fact, their product is Vista-compatible, quote-unquote, which means that they expect it works well with Vista. But they truly haven't applied for the Works with Vista logo as of yet, and he says they do plan to do that this year. So perhaps when it's fully certified and logoed to work with Vista, it'll work better and people will not have to consider switching.
Well, manufacturers shouldn't be preloading test software on people's computers when they buy it because the people have problems.
Agreed, assuming that that's happening and we don't have evidence that it is, but there is anecdotal evidence that it may be happening. I would like to say, though, that as for anyone who is considering switching antivirus programs, realize that if your program is not yet Vista certified, you maybe do a free upgrade to a compatible version when it becomes available. And we'll have links on our show page to both McAfee and Symantec's Vista pages where, in fact, they do tell you how to get your free upgrade. I would say one good piece of advice is to check in with the news groups and to check out sites like www.oehelp.com, where there are people who are dedicated to watching these problems and helping people solve them. Stephen, I want to thank you very much for your work, and thank you for joining us on NYT Tech Talk. Maybe we'll get to do this again.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Tom.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, thanks for listening. If you have questions you'd like to hear us answer, you can send them to nytt@nytimes.com. For the New York Times, I'm Tom Holcomb.
And I'm J.D. Beersdorfer.
Bye for now.